Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with Sid Weiler, creator of Trash Doves. We talk about her experience with Adobe's creative residency, streaming on Twitch, the downside of viral success, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prints for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. From business cards to banners to t-shirts and even socks, whatever you need, Jack Prints can print it. Right now, Jack Prints is offering these great deals. Business cards as low as $33. Custom banners starting at $23. 25% off all over printed shirts and socks. Jack Prints makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prints is giving Creative South podcast listeners 25% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprints.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We all secretly, and some of us openly, know that we have a deep love for stickers. Whenever we go to Creative South, we come home with a massive sticker haul and we feel like kids again. But why do we have to wait another year for this feeling? Luckily, Slaptastic can give you that feeling each and every month, direct to your mailboxes. Each month, you'll receive a pack of 6 limited edition themed stickers that you can enjoy and share with your friends and family. Head on over to www.slaptastic.com/CS17 and sign up today with a special offer just for you. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. Sid, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
So, I hate that we didn't get much time to talk at Creative South this past weekend.
Yeah, that's okay. It was a busy weekend.
Yeah, it was busy for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I like to always kick the show off with, you know, where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm from northern West Virginia, actually. North of Wheeling, southwest of Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. Right in the panhandle. Yeah, little town called Weirton.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up, were you big into art at the time, or did you kind of discover that later in life?
I always drew. I was very, very privileged. My parents put me through art and music classes as kind of extracurricular things on top of school. So I had some sort of, you know, more formal art classes as a kid. I enjoyed them as much as, you know, any kid, I think, being taken to classes enjoys being taken to classes. Sure. So I had fun. I didn't necessarily take it seriously until I was in high school. Mm-hmm. When I came across the Governor's School program. I'm not even sure what it looks like these days. You know, this was actually about 10 years ago. Basically, it was a couple week camp where if you were selected for whatever area you were applying for, you got to go to a college campus. It happened to be close to my house that year. Mm-hmm. And you were housed, you were fed, you went to classes every single day with professional, like, you know, professors in the field that you were studying. They took you to events. We had the opportunity to hear a lot of people speak. We got to go to plays, and we got to do cross curricular type of activities with the other focuses. So I was a visual mm-hmm. arts focus. So there was writing, there was music, there was vocals, just all sorts of creative artsy kids, I guess, sure. that liked the same things that I liked. And I actually got to interact with like professional artists that I'd never really done that before. And it kind of made me realize like, hey, people make a living from this thing that I actually kind of like to do.
So that was kind of the catalyst for you.
And it was all free. West Virginia provides all of that. Or at least they did 10 years ago. Yeah. So that's a pretty amazing, amazing program.
So I'm assuming that was kind of a catalyst for you of,
it was,
you
know, yeah,
this is what I want to do.
Yeah, totally. That was my sophomore year in high school. From then on, I really focused on the art classes in school, started looking at like college degrees, you know, what it was that I would need to do, schools that might offer that. Kind of looked at a lot of animation programs, really. I thought I wanted to go and work for like DreamWorks or Pixar or something like that, 3D animation. So I applied for Ringling along with other schools, decided on Ringling ultimately. Went there 2.5 years in to the computer animation program, failed out. that was fun. Yeah.
Was it just not a fit for you? Was it not holding your interest?
It was not a fit. They didn't tell me that it wasn't a fit. They just said that I wasn't like going to be successful in any sort of creative capacity. Basically I was told, you know, yeah, you have to repeat your year or we're not going to, you know, we're not going to continue you in the program. So it was just kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. I was already overworked and sick and tired and not enjoying myself in the program, along with many other people. And at that point I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to like, you know, ruin my health over this. I know that they're wrong. I know that I can do better than what I've been doing here. And I went to the counselor's office the next day and switched majors into illustration, which was the nearest thing credit wise. I mean, I was already 2.5 years into school. Sure. I was very fortunate. My parents were like footing the bill for that. So basically had to do something with those credits. And the illustration program was only going to tack on an extra year to my degree plan. So it was the lesser of all of the evils basically at that point. So I started my illustration career I kind of looked at that as ground zero. I was like, sure, I have a training. I have, you know, 2 years of basics classes. I've done 2D design, 3D design. I've done figure drawing. I've done perspective. I've done, you know, landscape painting. I've done all of this stuff. I have all of this under my belt. I can take this opportunity to say, okay, what kind of work do I actually want to be making, since I wasn't happy making the other work that I was making? So I figured that out. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously that's got to be a bit of an emotional blow when that happens as well. How did you process that?
I mean, it was not fun. For a long time, I didn't even like to talk about it. I talk about it now because I've overcome that particular roadblock. And in fact, I feel like a lot of what I've accomplished since then has been in spite of that. Sure. But that's ultimately what it was. It was spite. several other people, I think, were in the same position as me. Other people are repeating this every kind of day. Every year this happens to kids. And I think ultimately a lot of them overcome that by just saying like, you guys are wrong. We're really, really good at what we do. It's just that we weren't doing the right thing that we were supposed to be doing. So it was just kind of like a big middle finger to that entire program, that I decided I was going to work really hard, figure out what I wanted to do and then do it and ultimately just be happy in spite of that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you go through, you switch to illustration. You know, where do things take you after?
I had been in illustration for about a semester. At that point, my boyfriend also went to Ringling. He was in the same graduating year with me originally. He was in motion design. At that time, they had a professor named Joe Russ. It was his first year at Ringling. He was only there for a year. Jacob had him for class, and the year before he had kind of like interned with him a little bit. So he knew of what Joe was planning and that it might be a good fit for me to work with him. He was planning to make an indie game called Jenny LeClue. And that summer he was looking for for some help on work, some interns. And I was like, hey, like, I don't really have much of a portfolio. This is kind of the work I've been doing. It's maybe in a similar style to what you're looking for. He was like, cool, we don't really have a game, so let's see, you know, what we can make together. And then that summer, over a month, we made an entire Kickstarter trailer. We made all of, basically took all of his ideas from very, very basic scribble sketches and not much else to a fully presentable concept. Ran a Kickstarter over July and August, raised over $100,000, and ended up starting to make an indie game. So I was with that program or that project for a year and a half about. We made a playable demo, which is available for download. And we started like concepting out the game, and the game was getting to a point where it would be playable in sketch form. When I was getting ready to graduate college, I was looking for jobs, applied for Adobe, and was contacted by the creative residency to interview and become a creative resident. So that's about when I left that game project.
So with the game project, and we'll get to the Adobe Creative Residency in a minute. Yeah. What exactly were you doing? Were you doing like character design?
I was pretty much the only artist on the game. So I was doing everything from like environments to items to characters, from sketch to finished renders. I have some work on my Behance that is from the playable teaser. I think like everything except for like two parts of that, was like my basic designs and most of my renders. And we were working on making the game in a playable form when I left. And I don't know, I haven't really seen much in like a year. So I'm really excited
busy
to see.
Year, so.
Yeah. How much of my initial work will make it into the final game, and how much I'll recognize, you know, as I'm playing it, like, oh my gosh, this is my design, you know, so we'll see.
Sure. Well, how much of that proof of concept was done up front in those first 2 months where you were working on it before the kind of
quite a bit. We were working on a lot of environments for scenes that had been written out, working on balancing. I was doing a lot of prop design. I was doing a lot of kind of like gimmick brainstorming design. I had started a little bit of full render art just for some items, not too much, but I was streaming a little bit of that. So I don't know. I don't know how much has changed in a year. I don't know how much they ran with. I don't know how much they scrapped, you know, like it changes every day. It's super fluid in that kind of small team dynamic. So we will see.
So You get through that program, you've applied. What made you decide to apply for the Adobe residency? Let's start there.
I was applying for like everything that I might be a fit for. During like between November of 2015 and like February of 2016, I sent out probably 70 cover letters.
So just a couple.
Just a few. I was just looking for post-grad opportunities. I really didn't know what kind of work I wanted to be in, what I wanted to be doing, where I was going to fit. So I was just applying for all of the fits at that point. I had a thesis project that I was like pretty okay about. I really liked it. Saw that they were looking for projects that were kind of along those lines. Threw together. Actually, I didn't learn about it until about 6 hours before the deadline. So I threw together, my proposal in about 6 hours, submitted it pretty much the last minute. And it was just at that point, like another file, another PDF in my sent folder. I never expected a human to read it, and I never expected to get back. I'd actually forgotten about it. A couple weeks later, I got an email. It was actually probably closer to a month later that I got an email from the awesome, awesome woman who's now like been my liaison for a year with Adobe. And she was like, hey, I want to talk to you about the creative residency. And I'm like, what the heck is that? Like, did I apply
the
for
what?
This? Yeah. So I looked it up again and I was like, whoa, okay. So we had a phone call, and then they invited me out to San Francisco to interview with a bunch of team members out there. And they offered me the position. So I was one of four this year.
Awesome. And yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with the Adobe Creative Residency Program, kind of, can you explain it a little bit?
Sure,
kinda
totally.
Give me a little background on it?
Yeah. So we're going into the third year of it now. The new residents that will be announced in a couple of weeks will be the third generation. Sure. Last year, before my group, they had two, Kelly Anderson and Becky Simpson, both amazing, amazing women. They were handpicked from the team. They were looking for people to kind of test out the program to see, you know, how it was going to go, how it's going to be structured. My year was the first year that they put out a call for proposals for projects. So it's basically, it's somewhat like a sponsorship. It's kind of like a sponsorship, a fellowship, a professional development program, all mixed into one. There's really no other opportunity out there like it. They provide a full year of salary, benefits, travel, hardware, not to mention, you know, opportunities and networking via their name, basically, for creatives that they see doing things that, this is where I don't know, ever know what to say, I guess things that they think are interesting or unique or valuable in some way. Basically just kind of exploring concepts on their own that they wouldn't be able to do if they didn't have, you know, if they had a full-time job, if they had to freelance full-time, that kind of thing. So they saw me, they saw that I was working on the game. They saw that I was doing a lot of other freelance work on top of school. They saw my, my thesis project and they said, you know, I guess she has some potential. So yeah, I was basically under Adobe's wing for a year.
Gotcha. And what was your thesis project that you submitted to kind of get it?
It's a series called Before and After. Mm-hmm. So they were illustrations about places in one state of being and an after state of being. So on the left half, they're split symmetrically down the middle. On the left half, it's the before, and on the right side, it's the after. And sure. They were animated. So I did a series of those. And my proposal was to extend that project. So my project was to extend that more. We kind of talked more about making it about real places out in the world, going out and finding buildings that were being given new life. The project, I think, was scoped hugely. It was a massive, massive project. So we basically boiled it down to like four pieces about my hometown of Wheeling, West Virginia, actually. And those are not yet released because I was on a schedule to release them during like January and February. And then the trash dust happened. So that's a whole nother story. So we've been off schedule for that for a little while. But I think that a lot of my focus for my residency really ended up being on these kind of side projects that ended up kind of accidentally being really fruitful. For example, my Twitch channel, I had pitched that as part of my proposal because at that point I was streaming. I was like, you know, I'm sharing my process. People can come and ask me questions all the time. They really like that. One of the things that the residency affords is the opportunity to go to events, conferences, you know, that kind of thing. So I got to go to XOXO in September of last year.
Sure.
That was hugely, hugely life-changing for me. I just got to hear a lot of amazing entrepreneurs and creators talking about how they, you know, found their successes. A lot of them are making a living off of the internet in whatever way, shape, or form that looks like for them. So a common theme was, you know, independence through codependence. Not necessarily depending on, you know, a regular day job or some sort of, you know, traditional career path for, you know, your successes, but using newer technologies and communities found online to ultimately support you via your product, via your work, via your content. So that really got me thinking, and I was leaving there and I was like, you know what, like I have a thing that could do that for me potentially with some development. And that thing was my Twitch channel. It was my Twitch community. So I got home and I pretty much just buckled down on streaming. So I started sticking to a schedule. I started tracking growth. I started encouraging, you know, that kind of thing. And I was right. It's doing pretty well right now.
Well, in the past year, the Twitch Creative has really kind of taken off too. Mm-hmm. They've created a separate channel for it where it's you've got the creator channel,
mm-hmm.
Versus where, you know, a year and a half ago there was really just not that there weren't people out there doing that, but it wasn't segmented off. It was just everybody was lumped
in. Category. Well, they went all in. They hired staff members to manage the community, and they made the category like an official thing on site. They said, this is something we're going to actively foster. They're not just going to get shoved wherever they get shoved. So Twitch recognized that. Yeah. And gave us a space on their platform, which is amazing. So that happened about a year and a half ago, I think. It was a little bit before I started streaming, like literally like a week before I decided to start streaming, that they made a category. And it was a big thing, but, it's changed so much and the community's grown so much, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's genuinely my favorite place on the internet. There's so much goodness between streamers there. And that's built into organic growth. That's built into support streamer to streamer. It's just an extremely friendly environment. And, for a while there was a really, really great system working. Where you could sort of self-sort yourself onto various, you know, labelings on site. So, you know, if you were a sewing streamer, you'd go into the sewing category. If you were a painting streamer, you'd go into the painting category, of course. Mm-hmm. They recently took that system away. They kind of lumped us in with this new thing that they're calling communities, which is everyone on the site, gaming, IRL, everything, not just dedicated for creative. And that's really, really hurt the community recently. This is like in the last month that this has happened. And visibility.
Sure, because you don't have that breakout SEO and stuff.
Exactly. Visibility for us on site is way down. It's a lot harder to find streaming content that you're looking for. Like I was actually comparing the other day. I was like, it's almost easier to find things like live streamers on YouTube than it is to find things like a creative streamer on Twitch right now, just because everything's so buried and it's so jumbled and messy and confusing. So myself, other creative streamers have been seeing a lot of, you know, growth hindered, and we're kind of worried at this point. Twitch really needs to step up and recognize that they are actually, you know, one, costing streamers money at this point. Some of us make a living from this. Sure. And, you know, hurting themselves. Like, if we can't grow, they can't grow. I think that's kind of a mutual thing that they need to recognize. So we'll see if that improves at any point soon.
With your connections with Adobe, have you had the opportunity to speak with anyone at Twitch about stuff like this?
Not about this. I've been lucky enough to talk to, I've met a lot of the creative staff. It's a very small team. They're all very dedicated, very amazing people. I am not sure how much sway within the larger company they have. I mean, they're owned by Amazon now. Creative is a very small sector. We are definitely not the money makers on the site. You know, we're not esports. We're not Major League Gaming. We're not pulling the big bucks, but, you know, I think that anyone can visit our community and see the value there. Even if you're not a creative yourself, I think you can see what's happening there and why it's important, not just for the site, not just for itself, but for the larger creative community online. And I don't know. I just have a lot of hope that that'll help it prevail. please don't prove me wrong.
So with streaming on Twitch, how do you create a viable, before they buried everything, how do you create a viable revenue stream for you?
It's entirely about environment. I approach my channel very mindfully, where I want people who come to my channel, to my page while I'm streaming, to feel like they're sitting down at a table with me. I want it to feel like a shared digital workspace, almost like a studio, except, you know, none of us are wanting to sacrifice our creature comforts of my living room, for example. So I personally, like, I keep it really chill. We play really nice music. I really just gear my time on stream to being productive, to improving myself and my work, and sharing that knowledge and that kind of attitude and very forward facing, you know, good vibes with my audience. So people at this point are coming for that. They're people who are working from home. They're freelancers. Some of them are at work, you know, doing their desk jobs. I have people coming.
I would be on there
school.
If it wasn't blocked at work.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we all just kind of hang out. We help each other have better days. So that's a model that works for me. It doesn't work for everybody. You know, there are obviously like every single channel is different. It's really sure. just finding your groove and then doing what it is that you want to do. I started doing this because, you know, I was really inspired by other creative streamers, but no one was really creating the content that I wanted. I really wanted a space like what I've created, basically, where I could just go and work. And everything had, you know, distractions or bigger things that were happening. So I couldn't fully just get in that zone with that with that person. So, you know, it didn't exist. I created it. I think that that is where a lot of good content comes from. People just being like, well, it would be nice if this happened. And then, you know, if they want it bad enough, they'll just do it.
So, and this question comes from a person who talks into a microphone a lot when there's no one else around. How do you keep yourself from sounding crazy to yourself?
Well, sometimes I'm streaming because, I mean, I stream like 4 to 7 hours a day, depending on the day. So I'm sure. at my desk literally talking to a wall. And sometimes I realize that I'm like, no one else is in the house. I'm just talking to myself. But I think it's just the interactions, you know, it doesn't feel like that at all. I don't feel like I'm alone. Mm-hmm. Even though everyone I'm talking to is just a text scrolling in a box. I'm like, those are people. I know them. Mm-hmm. Most of them are very regular. I talk to them every day. It's not weird. My dog's here. My boyfriend's in the other room. It's kind of whatever. I don't think too much about it. And it's just, it's a good thing for me. It keeps me focused, keeps me, you know, kind of centered. And it's just a really good thing for me.
Gotcha. Cause I know for me when I'm like recording intros and stuff and one of the one of the things I want to do is I want to add more of a little bit of a monologue up front mm-hmm. where talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. And right now I just feel like I'm insane.
Well, it's totally in the interaction then. Cause like I started doing vlogs recently. I filmed a vlog for this mm-hmm. other thing that I'm doing with Microsoft and it's cringy. Like it makes you cringe where, yeah, there's no feedback. You're not really, you're doing it for that purpose. It just feels weird. I get that. I don't like doing that. I'm trying to figure out how to get comfortable with that. So I don't have an answer for you about that. But when I'm streaming, when
if you figure it out, please let me know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's more natural. It feels more like one-on-one when I'm streaming, whereas when I'm just recording video, sure. for sure.
So we were talking earlier about, you know, how things kind of came about and you brought up the trash doves. Where did that come from? Because I think that's
that was another one of my side
most. I mean, my mom knows what trash doves are. So my mom doesn't understand what I do, but she knows what trash doves are.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Back in September, Shauna Parmesan. Y'all know her Shauna Parmesan online. Shauna Panchezin. She's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. She texted me and she was like, hey, like they're releasing this new iOS update for the iPhone. You're going to be able to like have stickers in your text messages now, like on Facebook. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that's cool. She was like, anybody could sell them like on the App Store. Like you can make a set and like sell them there. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm not really a programmer. She's like, you don't have to be like, I'm doing it. I don't know how to code. She was like, you should make a pack. I'll help you like put them on the App Store. So this is like Thursday. The update was coming out like on Friday. She was like ground floor. She was getting it ready. I was like, all right, I don't really have any plans for the weekend. I think my boyfriend was out of town. It's like, let me just make a sticker pack. Why not? So I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to justify it. So I streamed the whole thing. I planned a whole event stream. Mm-hmm. I streamed like 7 hours a day, invited everyone that I could, Twitter, Facebook, everybody. I was like, this is happening. It's going to be super fun. You have to be there. And people came. It was the most, it was numbers that I would look back on today and be like, that was not very successful. But for the day, I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like so many people are here watching me. So we all kind of just brainstormed a lot of these ideas. They were all based off of some drawings that I'd done back in August of just some pigeons. And they were just some dumb little drawings that I'd done in a park that I didn't really think much of. But when I tweeted mm-hmm. them, they got like a ton of retweets. So people like the pigeon drawings. And Shauna was like, you should make some off of those pigeon drawings. So I was like, okay. So we all kind of like brainstormed, you know, pigeon puns and bread puns and food puns. And at the end of the weekend on Sunday night, we had the original 25 trash doves, including the one that headbangs. So that whole week, Shauna helped me get them on the App Store. They never would have existed without her because I wouldn't have figured out that stuff on my own. But she'd already figured it out and she'd done it. She had a pack that was in review. So those went up in a couple days. It was a good push. Lots of success in the initial release. Paid a couple months rent, which was like way more than I ever expected. I was just going to be happy if I made back my developer's fee, which was like $100. Sure. So it was successful enough that I made an update. I released like 15 more. And then that was successful. So I did a Christmas pack. Like, you know, Thanksgiving, holidays, New Year's, that kind of holiday pack. Right. And then at Adobe Max at the end of November, I happened to meet somebody who worked for Facebook and I was like, hey, like it would be really cool to put these on Facebook. Do you know who I need to talk to? Just because Facebook's so big. She's like, I actually do. And I'd already talked to like six people at Facebook and nobody knew the right answer. So I was like, oh, cool. I found the right person. Got in touch with the sticker team there. They emailed me and they were like, hey, we want to like put your things on Facebook. I was like, cool. So those went up on the site January 31st, I think. And so a lot of people like had been asking for them. So that was a cool thing. I did a little social media push. And then things were quiet for a while. It wasn't really a big thing.
Right.
I woke up like a week later on a Wednesday, rolled out of bed, sat up, started looking at my phone. And it was like, you know, 9 a.m. Like I was getting ready for my day, whatever. And like my phone was like blowing up. There were like all sorts of messages from a bunch of people that I hadn't talked to in a while. Like a bunch of message requests from people that I didn't know. And then a bunch of notifications from my like public art page that I never, ever posted anything for. I was kind of just username squatting. So I'm like, what the heck? So I start looking at these links and things that people are sending me. And it's like news articles of me with my photo talking about my work, talking about Adobe, talking about Twitch with the trash doves. Some of them were like in like Thai, like I couldn't read them. And then there were videos of people like headbanging and dancing and like dressed up as the bird. And it had like overnight in Thailand taken off and people were making content. People were like grabbing the sticker pack, which you could download for free on Facebook, and just spamming the purple headbanging dove in comments. Thailand is really, really cool with artist credit. They immediately sought me out. They immediately found who had made this thing that was like a new phenomenon for them, and started, yeah, like writing articles about me, writing, you know, the story of like how these birds came to be, what they were. It stayed in Thailand for a little while, spread to Hong Kong, spread to Japan, spread to South Korea, and then eventually ocean hopped. it started showing up and I was getting messages from England, from Brazil, from South Africa, Canada, everywhere. And yeah, it hit English speaking media and it's still a big thing. I mean, it's not as obviously a huge thing as it was, but people really like these birds. So February was actually probably the worst month of my life because of all of this. Some stuff that I haven't really talked about happened, where some really, really bad people attempted to kind of steal the bird as a mascot for themselves. Didn't work. Yeah, that's all I'll say about that. But, like that happened. And then there was mass art theft and infringement. I was so lucky. I didn't even realize what needed to be done, but a couple of my community members, including Shauna, pretty much just started up a Google Doc and started posting everything that came their way, everything that they saw, for me to, you know, review from one place basically, instead of having to go out to seek it. And I started filing DMCA claims to have stickers and apps and t-shirts taken down. Within one night, I filed 800 requests to take down t-shirts off of Amazon. So people were just taking these stickers, slapping them on anything they thought they could sell to try to profit off of this, you know, phenomenon. And it was just insane. So I was experiencing mass harassment. I had a couple death threats. Like were posting like my address. I was doxxed. People were posting my address, my home address, my parents' address, all this stuff. So on top of like vetting lawyers and like trying to keep this disaster, you know, under, you know, some sort of manageable scale. I was like trying to keep posting content. I was trying to maintain like a very positive forward facing attitude about it. And trying to get like a shop up, trying to get like merchandise. And it was just complete insanity. So I have a lot of really, really good friends to thank, for helping me. Like I said, Shauna, my community managers and some of my mods just kind of undertook, you know, responsibilities for themselves, to help me with some of this. Adobe was hugely, hugely helpful. They helped me find a lawyer. They helped me with a lot of other things that I don't even know if I can say what they helped me with. just absolutely, I could not have done it without them. And Virality, you know, of course there was a lot of fun stuff. I'm still getting tagged in cosplays. I'm still getting tagged in fan art, every single day, multiple times a day, people are tagging me in things. My social media channels are upwards of, you know, 150,000 followers since this. So, you know, generally the response was very, very positive. It's just unfortunate that I had to deal with all of the negative personally, but
the negative ones,
it went away. I mean, the crazy went out to sea.
Yeah.
Once the craze died, I am kind of left with what feels like a solid fan base for the character. So now I just get to have fun with it. I get to make stuff. I get to make merchandise. I get to make t-shirts. I get to make whatever I want. We're going to probably make a game. Yeah, we just get to enjoy it now, basically. So there was a lot of positive, but
how do you process both sides of that? I mean,
I really was very bad place mentally.
Yeah, because I imagine, you know, you get that initial, you know, kind of dopamine hit of when everything just takes off.
Yeah, it was great when it was in Thailand. It's, I was like, this exciting. Is super fun. Like, what the heck is going on? But and then some of the other negative stuff where these people attempted to co-opt the character as a hate symbol. You know, those people were going after me. They were conspiring to ruin my career, basically. And they were determined to make it as not fun for me as possible, even though this is it's nothing that I asked for. It's nothing that I'd ever expected or planned for. It's definitely not something that I want to repeat personally. And it's not something that I would ever wish on another creator ever. And it just, people suck. But for every bad person in the world, there are two good people. That is what I came to believe from all of that, that there is more positive than bad. It's just that the bad people, they don't have anything else to do with their time because they're terrible. So they devote it to just putting out more terrible. So
have you been able to deal with and kind of move past that negativity? And
for
lack of a better term, accept it?
Yeah. Because I don't know if it were still coming at me in the volume that it was, you know, 2 months ago today. I don't know where I'd be. My parents were like, do you need to go to an island where there isn't any internet? Like, I had to cancel a talk because I was like, if I'm trying to plan a talk and go through this, I'm going to end up in the hospital. I'm trying to move forward in a positive way where, like, this is an outlet. This is an outlet to talk about it, obviously, right now. I want people to recognize that virality is not something to be wished for or aspire to. I want them to understand, you know, how generally kind of bad a lot of this was for me. And from that, I want to educate about things that I learned about trademark law, intellectual property, copyright. What you can do to protect your work, what you can do to protect your image, how to market yourself. how to respond, you know, public relations, just on a very basic level. I want them to learn from my experiences. And then, you know, if that doesn't necessarily help them personally, I want them to be more mindful of where the content they consume online comes from. Because sure. ultimately, everything is made by somebody. Everything has, you know, some origin story, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. And you just have to make sure that you're keeping that in mind when you're doing anything, when you're, you know, enjoying anything. If you are making derivatives of anything, you know, it's all super important to remember. And people don't like to remember that.
Right. Well, I mean, I think one of the important things to remember is, and I'm sure you've had plenty of people tell you this, is those people, you know, who are threatening you and lashing out at you aren't doing it at you as a person, because they don't see the person behind it.
Oh, they will. Like, I mean, her.
Well, I mean, they are.
Depends on what it is. Yeah.
Yes. They are attacking you, but they're not mm-hmm. seeing you as
yeah.
Sid. They're just seeing you as this anonymous thing that it's not a real person. It's just somebody who.
They're seeing your online persona.
Yeah. So they don't associate.
Which for me is feelings. Actually very, very similar to how I am as a person.
Right.
So it's entirely case by case basis. Yeah, totally. Most people are not as visible publicly as I am, just because of my channel, just because every day I'm on camera, like you can come and talk to me in person. Sure. That's not the case for most people. So definitely, yeah, most people are, you know, seeing names. They're not associating that with people that they might be friends with or might, you know, even know personally. So yeah, it's totally a case by case basis. And I think as technologies like this come about, like, I don't know if it's going to make it any better or any worse, you know, as people become more accessible, as people become more visible, if that'll help or hinder that issue. But yeah, being anonymous is, it's an interesting game.
Yeah. So after all this happens, what, you know, safeguards and things have you put in place for yourself to hopefully protect yourself from this in the future if something were to happen?
I've learned a lot about info security. I've just learned a lot about, like I said, like intellectual property laws, which are super important to me as a creator. I know immediately what steps I can take to protect things that I've created if I don't like the usage, that it's, you know, been taken for. Past that, it's almost just word of mouth. It's almost just talking about, you know, what can be done, helping others that this happens to, basically, mm-hmm. you know, creating that chain of responsibility, that network. Other people did that for me. I had artists that are in active lawsuits reach out to me, to say, hey, we don't know if, like, you know what it is you need to be doing, but this is it. This is what you need to start reading on. These are some, you know, recommendations for lawyers, like, that you can vet. And if they don't, you know, fit your case, they'll have recommendations for you, that kind of stuff. Just like, basically just reaching out to other people and continuing that chain, because mm-hmm. I don't know where I'd be with it without that, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So moving past that, what, you know, what were the next steps for you? Cause I mean, Trash Tubs is still going on. It's still a thing.
Yeah.
But how are you growing past that and not letting that necessarily define you?
Well, I mean, I had always intended to kind of make more stuff for the Doves.
Sure.
It was just a matter of time and like resources committed. Now that I have a large fan base, you know, I get to devote that time. I can justify that. People mm-hmm. are going to like the content that I'm making. They're going to want to, you know, purchase any new products that I put out. So that's a revenue source. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, the biggest focus in my career. And I think that, you know, I have a lot of new fan base, from this being a meme. I didn't sure. create a meme. I created a character.
Mm-hmm.
So now I get to sift out the fans of the meme who aren't, you know, going to necessarily
assholes.
Care about me. Yeah.
Right.
Or, look further into my work or appreciate, you know, my other content. Mm-hmm. For what it is. I get to sift those people out. And from there, I'm left with people who will appreciate the character, who will appreciate anything new that I put out. Mm-hmm. And from extension, you know, look into me, look into my work, look into what other stuff that I'm doing. I have a few bigger projects on the very near horizon, actually. I'm going to be launching an interesting Patreon here very soon, which is going to be something of a subscription service for some of my work. It's going to be a little bit non-traditional.
So are you going to do a monthly or a per project?
Monthly. It'll be monthly. Yeah. And you'll be getting, some interesting stuff. I haven't talked about it anywhere yet. But I'm going to be talking about that online here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a great outlet. I think that that's going to be really unique. I haven't found anything else like it online. And just, you know, I've been developing my stream community. It's growing by the day. I want to make that my biggest focus. I basically just want to be able to sit down and stream and hang out with my friends and, you know, mm-hmm. answer questions, provide education on what it is that I do. And then, you know, just be able to work on my own projects. So I have some much, much larger projects that I have in mind, for streaming. I want to make a short film. I want to make a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have potentially 10 years of content planned out if I end up making all of the stuff that I want to make. Of course I won't. Of course I'd divert and do other ideas, but it's just, I'm not letting it define me in that I own it. You know, it does define me. I accept that. Well, but yeah, it's not all that I'm ever going to make. And
that's what
going.
I meant by define you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to keep making stuff. And, you know, even if nothing else, I don't ever expect to have another project to like the Trash Devs are like internationally famous. They're an international phenomenon. I don't mm-hmm. expect to ever have anything like that happen. And I don't want it to. That's the other thing. I don't right. want anything to be this big just because I really do believe that community is the basis of it. You need mm-hmm. to find a very, very dedicated audience for your content. That's sure. that's the basis that's going to lift you up. That's the basis that's going to support you for you and your content. It's not, you know, being famous for one thing that, you know, they happen to like because it's cute and funny. It's the people who are going to support you for, you know, the appreciation of the creation at that point. Mm-hmm. So it defines me in that way that it was huge. Right. But it also doesn't matter to me in that way. I don't ever intend to do that again. And I don't ever aspire to do that again. It was accidental. It's cool. People know me for it. Great. If anything, it'll just bring more people who would be potentially interested to the projects that I do care more about and I'm more personally invested in at this point.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, it's a fun outlet. I mean, they're cute birds. Like, it's not hard to draw.
Yeah.
It's not. No, I mean,
they're definitely fun.
It's always been, it's one of my favorite projects that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. It's unique in my body of work in that it's my comical outlet kind of, I don't really have any other work that I've done like that for that purpose. And it's awesome in that it's accessible. People can use it in their daily mm-hmm. lives, sometimes for free, you know, mm-hmm. The amount of positivity that I've gotten, you know, people texting me, sending me photos of, you know, screenshots of conversations they had with their friends, with their mom, with their boyfriends, where they're using my art for like positive, meaningful, funny conversations. Like, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm completely okay with that.
So I know one of the things, and this is very much in the same theme, is, and I saw this a few weeks ago, Trash Bandits? Is
yeah,
that what you're calling
Bandits. Them? Yeah. So I made another sticker pack. They're not going on Facebook. I had kind of had the idea to make them for a while. And then when Trash Devs took out, I was like, I should be making sticker content, but I don't really want to work on these things anymore. Here's an idea I can develop as kind of something related to everything else that's happening. But also enough of a mental break that I don't mind working on it.
Sure.
So, yeah, I streamed all of that process, made it all online, and just released them. And it's been very successful.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Moving past that, since has the Adobe Creative Residency ended or is it coming to an end?
Next week. Pretty much two more weeks. Yeah, end of April.
So those paychecks are going to stop coming in.
They are.
Yeah. You know, and that's got to be a little scary going out on, you know, being out on your own. And
yeah, it'll be my first time. independent from school, independent from parents, independent from Adobe. Yeah, definitely. But it's something that I've been prepping for several months now. I mean, it's not like I'm just like, oh no,
I would hope so.
No more paychecks. Yeah. So I'm depending on my streaming, which is paying fairly handsomely and is only hopefully going to keep going up as my community grows. Hey, Twitch, can you fix some issues, please? the stickers are still, you know, selling fairly well. Very surprisingly dependable numbers these days, especially as I advertise. That's a very nice chunk of income per week. I will be going back into freelancing. I am currently working on a couple of deals with some interesting projects. I actually kind of have my choice of cool things to do this summer. So I might be working on a card game. I might be working on an actual game. There's some other stuff in there that I can't really talk about yet. Sure. That will hopefully, you know, come to fruition. And, like I said, I'm launching the Patreon. So that will hopefully, with a couple months of development, end up being pretty lucrative. So, you know, with all of these kinds of passive income revenues, which it's not necessarily passive, you know, the Patreon's going to be work. The Twitch channel's work, definitely.
Sure.
The stickers are work for advertising. But ultimately, if I can make all of these numbers, you know, agreeable enough, I'll be living off of my own content. I'll be living off of my own IP, and just marketing my skills at that point. And I'll be able to be choosy with freelance. Yeah. So that's kind of where I am right now. Not too bad off, I have to say. Cannot complain at all.
No, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are some other opportunities that, you know, being in the Adobe Creative Residency program and the success of Trash Doves and things like that, what are some opportunities that and doors that have opened up for you from that?
Gosh, a lot.
I mean, you're allowed to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to be fair, some of them I can't talk about right now. Hopefully we'll be able to soon. I think that the opportunities provided by Adobe were more so meeting people, talking to people who were, you know, months, years, decades ahead of their careers, and just kind of siphoning all of that off. It was really just a lot of time for me to figure out what it was I wanted to be doing, I think, is ultimately what I'm taking away with from it. I think that I used the year sort of accidentally to experiment and to play and to test things out in personally and, like, you know, publicly in the public eye online on social media. I was able to condense probably 5 to 8 years of that kind of work, you know, testing out, trying things, playing into a year. And now I know what I want to do. I know what kind of work I want to take on. I know what kind of work I want to be doing personally. I know what I want to be fostering within my communities, within my work, within my content and outlet. And I think that that is ultimately what's going to drive me down kind of the right path. For a while, like, you know, so many amazing things came at me during the residency. I said yes to a lot of them. But, you know, some of them were distractions. Some of them I learned that I didn't really enjoy doing that type of work, or I didn't, you know, find personal fulfillment. I didn't see the payoff from it. And now, you know, I know I won't be looking for that kind of work at this point. I'll be looking for other stuff that I do enjoy and that I know that I enjoy. So I think that that's more of it. It was more of a personal development. Yeah.
Gotcha. What exciting are you looking forward to in the next year?
I would like a very boring year, to be honest.
Well, yeah, you've had a lot of excitement. I can understand that.
I have 5 years of college, which was a rocky, rocky road for me. I had no break whatsoever. Jumped right into Adobe and had a year of travel and work and just a lot of stuff. So I would really just like some quiet time to just sit down and draw and work out some of the ideas that I've had on the back burner for a couple months. Mm-hmm. And just sort of get back into my own routine of doing that kind of thing. But now I'm looking down the road and I've got an event every month I'll be traveling for. So it's not even coming. It's not even gonna
So work you're not out that slowing way. Down even no, though you would like to.
No, I'm not. But I've got a vacation. I'm going to Iceland in July, so that's gonna be nice. Awesome. Yeah, I'm going with Light Gray Art Lab out of Minneapolis mm-hmm. on sort of an artist retreat, and we're just gonna go look at stuff in Iceland, and it's gonna be awesome.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Cool. So are you, I mean, you said you've got stuff going on every month. Are you booked up until then, or are you booked up after then too?
I'm doing a workshop at 99U mm-hmm. In June. I have something in May, but I'm not sure when or what it is. It's with Microsoft. I'm doing this other thing with Microsoft. But I know there's something in May, so I've just been counting on that.
You might want to look at that on your calendar. It's coming up pretty
quick.
They
haven't really like told me what it is yet or like where I need to be. It could be like any city. I don't know. We'll figure it out soon. And then, yeah, just like a bunch of conferences and events during the second half of next year. So it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of used to it at this point. And I'm also going to be moving. We're not going to be living in Florida for much longer.
Oh, where are you moving to?
We're not sure yet.
Ah, still deciding. Okay.
Yeah, we might move back up north near our parents. Our parents are both from like similar area. Mm-hmm. We don't really have anything tying us here. You know, we were here sure. for school. We didn't have to relocate for work. My boyfriend's like, you know, contract freelance remote worker. So mm-hmm. we can live wherever we want. And we're just not feeling Florida anymore.
Understandable, especially as hurricane season approaches.
Yeah, we'll head out of there and pay some cheaper rent for a couple years.
That will be nice too.
Yeah.
Well, Sid, where can people find you online?
I am at Sid Weiler everywhere. SYDWEILER. That's pretty much it. I'm not too hard to find.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you.
It was great meeting you at Creative South.
Yeah, awesome to meet you too.
Yeah, so we end every podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks. And since you've been to Creative South, I'm sure you heard Mike say it a few times.
Say what?
Go out and hug some necks. Did you really not hear Mike say this?
No, I didn't.
So it's the way of saying, you know, go out, make friends. Don't be a stranger. Absolutely. You know, hug some necks.
Okay.
So would you mind taking us out by saying that?
All right, everybody, go out and hug some necks.
Perfect. Sid, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Sid on Twitter at Sid Weiler, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, over at CreativeSouth.com, and I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit JackPrince.com and get 25% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CreateSouth17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.